Hi there, welcome to Halos of Home, a Radio Mariam podcast. I'm Serena, and for today's episode, we have Ellen. I mistakenly forgot to record the introduction with her, but I can briefly introduce her myself. She is from Iran. Initially, she moved to the States as a teenager. She is currently a medical student and was volunteering in Gyumri for 3 months. Now she's already gone back to the States. Be in tune for our lovely discussion.
So the first question, you are from Iran.
Yes.
Were you required to make more sacrifices while you were living in Iran compared with the US, and why or why not?
Yes, I did make more sacrifices because I had to give up my freedom of speech. I couldn't dress up the way I wanted to. I always had to like cover up, be mindful of the things I'm saying out in public, because obviously you get a punishment for that. You don't have like a freedom of speech. You can't sound your opinion.
Wow.
Unfortunately. So yeah, I had to sacrifice all of that. But when I moved to the US, I was like, oh, this is new to me, all this freedom. And
is that just in your public life in Iran, or even privately in your house? Does it become so pervasive that you literally don't even get a second to actually express what you think?
No, in public, of course, it's like you can't, but in private, in your own house, you can talk about it. You have to be mindful, you know? So there's a thing, I don't know if it's still a thing, back then, like 10 years ago, we had like channels watching shows to like, I don't know, Turkey movies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know what they're called. You're not allowed to have that. So we would know when the police would come and check and see if you have it.
Like a satellite.
Exactly, satellite. I forgot the name. So we would bring it down, and then when would they leave, we would put it back again. So that's one of the things, yeah. It was just crazy to me. It's like, have you read the 1984 book?
Mm.
It felt like that. Yeah.
I'm just shocked.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up moving to the States?
Well, my parents decided, my mom first, and then she had to convince my dad because he didn't want to leave. But then, like, he saw the situation. He was like, yeah, I don't want you guys to grow up here. So we just decided to move. And then it was back in 2015, we decided, and then a year until everything got approved, until we got a visa. Yeah.
Is everything you described about having to be careful how you dress and your opinions that you're voicing, is that for women in particular, or it's a general sketch of life in Iran?
The way you dress, I think particularly women. And then with the revolution, the women's revolution that happened recently, I don't know if you heard about it. This girl goes to Tehran and she's not covering her head. What happens is the police, they're called the what police? I'll remember. They took her, and while dragging her to the van, she falls and she hits her head. And then she goes into coma and whatever, she dies. So after that, obviously everyone was, what the heck is going on? So there was like a revolution happening. And now they're more chill about the way you dress up. But yeah, it was crazy. I was 13 when I was forced to wear hijab. I was out with my mom. And then the police stopped. Oh, they call them morality police. There you go.
What?
Yes, I just remembered. Morality police. So he stopped me. He was like, you're too grown not to wear a hijab. I was like, okay. So he literally waited for me to go to the store and buy something and put it on. And then he left.
What?
Yeah.
Was it very angsty being forced to sacrifice those things that you didn't want to sacrifice?
At that time, that was 13, I didn't fully understand. I'm giving up my freedom. I really didn't understand. And I was like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to put it on. But then as you grow up, you're like, oh, that's messed up. You can't force people wear things they don't want to wear. Because, like, I'm Christian living in a Islamic country, and I still have to follow the rules. Okay, I get it. But then at the same time, I'm like, I really don't want to live this life. During their holidays, things like that, see, I can't remember the names in English right now, but I know them in Farsi. It's called Muharram. It's like when someone dies. It's like a remembrance day, week. You can't eat on the street. You cannot drink water on the street. You cannot really wear colorful stuff on the street. And that applies to everyone, regardless their religion. And it's hard. I feel like, yes, I should respect everyone, but like at the same time, I have to live my life. So these are the things that makes you want to leave. Yeah, and so we left.
Do you feel like it was a sacrifice? Or if you're forced to do it, you'd still describe it as a personal sacrifice?
Yes.
In what sense?
I would love to grow up there. I would love to continue living there. Because that's the country I was born in. I want to grow up there. In the future, if I have kids, I want my kids to experience that life too. But I was forced to live in a different country. So, to me, that's a sacrifice. But it's weird because I don't miss it a lot now. I don't miss Iran as much as I used to. And, like, I don't really think about moving back anytime soon or in the future. Which is crazy to me because I used to miss it, like, crazy.
What did you miss the most about it in the past?
I think, I don't know how to describe it. It was just, I would see, like, photos of Iran. I was like, oh my god, I wish I was there. But now I see photos, I'm like, eh, okay. I miss the feelings that I had there. Feeling of home, like I'm home. But now I don't feel that way at all. I don't think Iran is home anymore to me.
Yeah. So you miss identifying Iran as home?
True, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Is the States your home currently?
No, definitely really? Not.
What's home for you?
Home? I've thought about it a lot. I think it depends on the time. Right now, home to me is experiencing this. I'm in Armenia, meeting a lot of people, doing a lot of things with a lot of people. That experience to me is home. Sometimes it could be a place. Sometimes it could be people. Sometimes it could be a feeling. So, yeah. But right now, to me, home is just the feeling of experiencing new things.
So after this adventure, this chapter of your adventure end, would the home be the same in the sense of you're still going to be experiencing new things?
Part of it, but then when I go back, something new is going to be my home. I feel like when you move a lot from place to different place, a place like physically cannot be your home. And like belonging to a country is hard too. I've had this conversation with a lot of diaspora. Like, we cannot identify where is home. Yeah. So, like, you try to look for it in different things. I am looking for it in, like, new experiences, adventures, and things like this. I'm not physically looking for a home. Like, oh, US is my home, Iran is my home, Armenia. No, it's like, whatever experience I have in that country is my home.
Is the reason you're not physically looking for a place, is it because you've given up that you're going to find a place that is home due to your diasporan identity?
I think that, but at the same time, I'm thinking about moving out of the States eventually. I don't see myself living there forever, or at least full time. So for that too.
When you're thinking about leaving, are you thinking of finding a concrete place or... Not even necessarily.
Yeah, no.
Just get out.
Just get out.
Explore, see how I like the country. And if it's not good, then I'll go somewhere else. Is it that mindset?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I could stay somewhere forever, forever. Until I have a stable life, I guess. When I have like a family, maybe then. But for now, I don't think I can stay somewhere forever.
What do you look for when you are thinking of a place to perhaps call home and perhaps move to in the future? Do you have a criteria? And why does the States not feel like some place you'd want to live in long term?
I really don't know. I feel like I'm looking for something new all the time, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing to look for something new 24/7, because I get bored really quick. And I hate that about myself. But at the same time, it let me like experience a lot of new things. It lets me get out of my comfort zone. For that specific reason, I think I'm not gonna stay in the US, at least for full time in the future. But when I say until I'm stable, I mean like when I find peace, actually peace, and when I'm like okay with the things I have and I'm not looking for other things. then I'll be able to stay, I think.
That sounds like contentment to me, when you feel content in a place.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And you mentioned how you don't want to stay in the States because your comfort zone would be too intact and you like to go outside of your comfort zone.
Yes.
Has that been true for you while being in Armenia? Have you felt uncomfortable? Has this felt comfortable? How would you describe it?
Well, deciding to come here was definitely not easy. Well, it was easy in a sense. I decided to come here within probably 10 minutes.
Same.
I guess it wasn't that hard. I was like, okay, I'm going. I didn't tell anyone until I had my interview. And then I think I got the official welcome. And then I told my parents, I was like, hey, like, this is happening. They're like, what's going on? Like, we didn't know this. I was like, yeah. They thought I was joking at first. They thought I was joking. It took me a while to convince them I'm actually going. So it was all under 10 minutes. It definitely was a comfort zone problem, too, because I'm not a really social person back home. I do not like to talk to people a lot. Mm-hmm. I tend to stay away. But coming here, it's been crazy. I'm talking to everyone I see. I'm like, hey, let's be friends.
Mm.
So I definitely stepped out of my comfort zone, for sure. I love it here. But I don't think I could stay here full time because it's so similar to Iran.
Is it?
Oh, girl, yeah. People's mindset and like all of that is so similar. I'm like, I ran away from that. And coming here and wanting to live here full-time would actually be crazy.
Has the experience, once you've been living here, has it been uncomfortable? Because I think when we share our experiences, we highlight the positive aspects.
Yes, yes.
Have you experienced discomforts during your journey of being in Armenia?
A little bit, yeah.
Mm.
I don't know if I could talk about it on here.
That's okay. That's okay.
But other than that, I think I mostly see the positive things, mainly because I'm only here for a while. I'm not thinking about moving here right now. But when I'm actually serious about it, obviously I'm going to have to weigh it down, see the negatives and positives. But if I ever move here, it's going to be part-time only because I can't live here full. It's going to drive me crazy.
Yeah. And do you expect that when you go back to the States that you're going to be more social than what you were like before you came to Armenia? Do you expect a different personality in a way?
I definitely think I'm going to be a different person. I already feel it. And I'm actually excited to go back and be the new person. That's definitely going to change. I'm going to be more social. I like being social. That's what I learned about myself. I don't know why I'm not social back home, but I love being social. So I discovered that. So I'm excited to go back and see how that goes.
Do you think people will give you space to be this new version of yourself, or would their expectations kind of corner you in from different angles?
I think they're already like expecting me to change, because like I've spent a good time here.
Yeah, how long? 2 months?
Around three.
3 months.
And I think they're expecting me to like at least change a little bit. So they're not going to be shocked. But it's going to be hard to... Okay, now I'm thinking. It's going to be hard to be so social back home because I have work and school at the same time. So I'm not going to have to balance that. Here, I don't have to worry about my studies. I only go to work and then after work, I'm free. But back home, it's not like that. It's either work or school. And on top of that, I'm doing extracurricular school-related stuff. So also worried about that. And that doesn't give me much time to be free and do whatever I want. Maybe that's why I'm not that social.
Yeah. If you don't have the time and the availability, then...
Yeah, now I'm thinking I do a lot.
Is it possible if you reduced how much you're doing? Would you consider reducing or...
I considered reducing. But I hate saying no to people. Because I tutor and I tutor someone I know. And I'm like, I don't want to leave that person. Because, like, I know they need the help. And, like, I see the progress. So I'm like, I don't want to leave tutoring. I'm president of a club at university. And, like, no one else is doing it. So I'm doing the job. And I don't want the club to disappear because it's really a good club. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And then, obviously, I have work. And then my school stuff. I'm also pre-med. I have to study for the MCAT. So it's crazy. Reducing seems a little hard.
I relate to that so much. When you see that there's a job that it seems like only you can do it, and even if it is exhausting, you just keep trying to power through because you're like, I really want this to have a future.
Yes, because it's like, okay, for the club thing, it was a club and then it disappeared, and then now it's a fairly new thing again. And I'm like, I don't want this to, you know, go down in the ashes, because it's something people actually can get help. So I don't want it to, you know, not be a club.
Has Armenia taught you to simplify your life more?
Oh, girl, yes. Like, how am I going to, like, clock in at 10 a.m.? I clock in at 8. Yeah. That's when I start working. So, like, at 10 a.m., I take my first break.
Yeah.
But here, you go to work at 10 a.m.
And you get your break before you even work.
Yes. It's like you walk in, it's 10 a.m. Like, until 10:30, 11, you take your break. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. It's like a pre-break break, I guess. And then you start working for an hour and I'm like, oh, coffee, I think I need coffee. Yeah. So that's another hour. They don't have, like, what's it called? Like, physical things to tap in, like, oh, that's when I go out, that's when I come in. So it's easier, but no, it's going to be hard to adjust. It's going to be hard to not have Uber 24/7. Because back home I drive, and I'm like, I'm so used to taking Gigi here. I'm like, I think I forgot how to drive, to be honest with you. So it's going to be a fun time. Yeah. Streets, be ready for me. Yeah.
Just keep your eyes open.
I know, right?
That's it.
So, yeah. And, like, here I take everything so easy. I do it last minute. And I'm such a procrastinator, so that doesn't help at all.
Okay, we were talking about sacrifice, and I'm circling it back to this.
Yeah.
Do you think that all sacrifices are valuable? Or can we sometimes sacrifice the wrong thing, perhaps with the wrong measure?
Not all sacrifices are valuable. I, for example, do sacrifice a lot of things that I shouldn't. For example, my health, especially coming here. Honestly, I don't think I've ever prioritized my health, which it's a big sacrifice. You don't understand the worth until you get sick. You're like, oh my god, I wish I could go back to the day I wasn't sneezing. So I think that's something most people sacrifice, honestly. But like unintentionally, I want to say. Because I'm here, I want to have fun, I want to spend my time with my friends, even if that means getting till 6 in the morning, and then going to work that same morning, and doing it all over again. That sounds fun. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm here only for a short amount of time, so I'm going to do it. I can rest when I go back home. Which is technically not true, because I pull all-nighters. So, that's one of the sacrifices. Sometimes we do sacrifice the people we love, which hurts the most. Yeah, I think those are the things that come to mind right now. Your own integrity, your own values, sometimes you sacrifice that for the wrong purpose, wrong people. So I feel like when we want to sacrifice something, we have to see what we're getting in return, if it's worth it. If I'm sacrificing my health right now, is it going to be worth it in the future? Which most likely it's a no, but we still do it.
What makes us to still sacrifice things that we know it's not a good thing to sacrifice? Is it a compulsion or?
I think it's the itch you have at the moment to just do that specific thing. Let me think of an example. Just going out. Okay, FOMO, fear of missing out, is such a big thing. You're like, oh, I want to go. I want to do it. That feeling you get at that moment is, I think, so high that you're like, okay, yeah, I'll just do it.
So like a short-term impulse and this feeling. Fear of missing out is very prevalent, I think, amongst our generation.
Yes.
Have you ever said no to something because of your values and then you feel like people are less open towards you because you're not open to something that they're engaging in?
I have, yeah. Yeah.
What does it feel like? Does that feel like a worthwhile sacrifice?
Yeah. For me, yes, it does. And I'm glad I'm like standing on business. But other times, other things I've said no to back home, but when I came here, I was open to it, which is so weird. But then I was like, oh, I sacrificed my values. Do I feel bad about it necessarily? No. But it was something that I didn't want to do initially, but I did it anyways.
So with the things which are not worthy to sacrifice, what about the most valuable things that we can sacrifice, particularly in relation to helping ourselves and other people find home? What would you say are the best sacrifices?
Honestly, this might be controversial, but your time. You can sacrifice your time, I guess. That could be a bad or a good thing, depending on whatever you're going to get in the future. But people are so scared of losing time. I'm like, it's time. It's going to pass anyway. So just do whatever you want to do and then see what happens. And then when time passes and you sacrifice some, you're definitely going to find home.
Really? But yeah. That's happening to all of us, always. Time is always passing. So does that mean everyone will find home eventually?
Eventually, because you're searching for it. If you're searching for home, you're going to find it anyways. You're going to find it at some point in your life. Nah, that could be in a month. That could be in, like, years.
Is it something you can grab, do you think? Because you could find it when you're 20 and then when you're 25. It's something completely different when you're 70.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My answer probably would be different 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super interesting. That's why I love having people on the podcast. Yeah. Because it's such a kind of a record of the time of their life that they're in. And even the questions that I ask, it really depends on my present state as well. Super interesting.
Maybe like we'll listen to this in a year and our answers are going to be completely different.
We could even seem like strangers to ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. I want to listen to this in a year.
You wouldn't?
I would. I want to listen to it and see if my answers have changed, which I think they probably would have.
100%.
Yeah.
They would change.
If you were to ask me what's home 3 weeks ago, that was totally different answer than today. Yeah. I might come in next week and different answer.
Do you think that's especially the case when we're young, that we're changing our minds more
100%.
Often? Yeah.
Yeah. I hate to say this because we're thirsty. We're constantly looking for something. We don't see what we have. We're just constantly looking for something.
Does it relate to the fact that we're less content than people who are older than us? Is that why there's this constant thirst?
I think it's the urge of getting where you want to get to. So you're like, oh, I just want to get there. So you're like, that's why you're constantly looking for something.
Yeah. Like a vision of our future selves that we're trying to become.
Yeah.
Whereas people who are older have already become this version, more or less.
Yeah. So we're rushing through things a lot.
Rushing?
Yeah.
You think it's a rush? Why is it a rush? Why do we not pace ourselves and take our times?
I wish I knew the answer. I don't even know why. But like what I've understood, my therapist helped me understand this. It's like you're going to get there anyways. From point A to point B, you're going to get to point B 100%. So why not enjoy the journey? Why are you rushing through it? That's so true. That's something easy to understand, but yet we don't understand it. Just enjoy it. You're going to get there anyways.
I think you're not necessarily going to get to point B. Point P could easily change.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That's so true. But just enjoy it.
Just enjoy.
If it happens, it happens. If not, then like, it doesn't.
And something better will happen if it doesn't.
Yeah. I can give an example. So I was so sad that I was not going to graduate on time. Because with moving and stuff, I had to start my high school year again. Because I didn't finish it in Iran. So that set me back. And I was like upset about it. Because I had all these plans in my head. I was like, yeah, I'm going to graduate when I'm 20. And then I'm going to get into medical school. I'm going to graduate by the time I'm 24. And I'll be a full-on doctor. I'm 24. I'm not even in medical school yet. So if it was me a year ago, I would be so mad and upset and sad. But now I'm like, no, it's not worth it. I know I'm going to go to medical school. Doesn't matter to me like in a year or two. Would I rather be 30 and a doctor or 30 and not a doctor? You know what I mean? So why am I rushing through it? Like when I become a doctor, I'm going to complain about patients and stuff. I'm going to complain about the work hours. I'm just going to complain now about my studies. And just see what happens. Yeah.
So you have a more relaxed view about time.
Yes.
The older you've gotten.
Yes. And sometimes, honestly, that scares me.
Why?
Because I'm too relaxed now. It's crazy. Like, my brain shifted like that.
Or they look like to be too relaxed. Like, you're not taking it seriously enough to progress.
Well, no, I'm progressing, but like in a very much slower pace, which I appreciate because I'm not rushing, but at the same time it makes it look like I'm really lazy and I'm not doing anything, which is not true. I'm doing it, just people don't see it.
Yeah.
But But sometimes I'm like too relaxed. I don't even think about it. I'm like, eh, if it happens, it happens. I wasn't like that. Yeah, I was so like, oh no, it has to happen.
What made you relax your expectations for?
I think my therapist, which I had like a year ago. Yeah, it was him. It was because of him. I don't know if he knows that, but yeah.
Are there things that you are unwilling to sacrifice, and what would they be?
I said values, but then I sacrificed some of my values, but I still think I would try not to sacrifice my values. Because it's really hard to say, oh, I'm not going to sacrifice this. And the next thing you know, that's what you're doing. But I would try my best not to. Like my self-value, I guess? The things I believe in? Yeah, those are the things I'm trying not to sacrifice.
But you're not perfect at
absolutely not. I don't think, honestly, anyone is perfect. Like 100% to be able to say, oh, I'm definitely not doing this and they're not doing it. It's really hard.
How can we increase our strength to not sacrifice our values?
Something Michael said, it was in a different context, but I think I can apply it here, is that let's say you do that one thing and then a few days after you think about it, you're like, oh, I wish I didn't do it. If you think about that situation and if you still want to do it, then just go ahead and do it. But if you think you're going to regret it, then maybe that's not a good idea.
Yeah. So essentially thoughtfulness, not following the short-term impulse, the itch.
Which is really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I would say like give it some time, maybe like a day or two. If it's still there, do it. If it's not, then no.
Do you relate to being a very impulsive person?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In some situations, yes. Especially when it comes to cutting people out of my life.
Really, you're too quick at doing it?
Oh my god, yes.
What?
Yeah. It's because...
Like, you get too busy, or like,
not like that. Something happens, I don't give it time, I'm like, okay, bye.
Yeah, you react too emotionally.
I feel like by the time I get to the point where I'm like, okay, bye, I'm already so tired.
Yeah.
With you and your stuff. So I'm like, okay, I don't think I can deal with this anymore. So like, bye. And I don't really look back after it. Which is a bad thing. Because like after all the years you've spent with that person, all of a sudden you're like, okay, bye. It makes me think if I was really intentional with that person. Or like, I don't know. I was just a friend. This is a therapy session. Oh my god. Yeah.
What are you doing about this realization?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Because at the same time, I like it. I love that I can do that.
Like it's a protective, something that is good at not allowing unworthy people to be in your life?
Yes. Mostly, yeah. Because like, what's the point of you being in my life if you're not adding anything, but you're taking away from my energy? You're impacting me in a negative way. If you had something valuable to add to my life, maybe it would be worth it to keep you in my life. But if not, then no.
I want to now talk a bit about freedom and adventure, because when I asked you how to define home, you said sacrifice, freedom, adventure.
Yes.
We've touched on sacrifice probably as the main theme. With freedom, I'm curious, can the desire for freedom ever be compulsive? And also, how would you tie adventure and freedom together if you can see a connection there?
I feel like if you're adventurous, you would want more freedom. I don't know if necessarily you have a lot of freedom, you would be adventurous. I don't know if that's the case. Because when you don't have the freedom, you're like, I want to go out there and see what's going on. But when you have the freedom, you're like, okay, I already have access to it. So when I was in Iran, I was seeing all these things on media and TVs. I was like, I want to live that life. So I was always eager. And I was always adventurous. I wanted to try things. So after I got the freedom, I was like, yes, I'm going to do all of this. So I started traveling a lot more. I started just doing the things I wanted to and that I couldn't back home in Iran. See, I still call it back home. So yes, that's how I tie adventure and freedom together. And like when you're adventurous, you experience new things, then you're going to find home.
And with being in Iran and looking to these, not promises, but potentialities for your future, your imagination would be very heightened.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that your imagination got weaker when you were in the States?
No. I'm such a daydreamer. My imagination, it's so much stronger. Because I have all these imaginations. I'm like, will I have time to get to all of them? Is the problem. Yeah, no, my imagination definitely did not get weaker.
Did it get stronger in the
100%,
States?
100%.
So the more freedom you had, the more your imagination took off?
Yes, yeah.
Is it because you can see that the possibilities are actually real? So
yeah.
You start imagining more and more and more of them?
Mm-hmm. See, if I was born in the US and I grew up there, probably my imagination would be as strong as it is right now. I would have access to all of it.
You take it for granted, so you don't have to imagine.
Exactly. But like when you grow up in a country where you're restricted, you just want to fly off. You want to fly through the restrictions, but it's kind of hard. So like when you have that access, you're free and you're like, oh my God, you get lost. You will need time to process what you actually want.
Does everyone in Iran have this expansive imagination, or do some people deal with the restrictiveness by denying what's actually happening, the unfreedom, which makes them not have an imagination?
That's a difficult question to answer because I think it's different from person to person. Honestly, it depends on your economic status, too. If you're really rich, you can do whatever you want. But if you're really poor, you're really restricted. If you're in the middle, obviously, it's like, eh. In the poor, we still have people who, you know, they're not restricted, which is so weird. It's a weird situation. I don't think I can fully answer that. It's hard to answer, because...
What about in your acquaintances, your family members? Did you notice that all of them were on the side of having an imagination, or it depends on personality factors and how we deal with adverse circumstances?
See, most of my cousins, including me, we all left. Probably three of them that are still there. And they already have a family there. When I talk to them, they don't really show intentions of moving out. So I'm guessing they're not necessarily okay, but they've adapted themselves to that situation and conditions. But I was only 15, 16, so like adapting wasn't really a thing for me. I had to live there until I couldn't move if my parents didn't move. So I didn't really have a choice. But my cousin, she and her husband, they moved out. They didn't want to adapt to those conditions. So it's different, even in my family. It's like different from person to person.
When you were 15 and even younger than that, did you know that this was not normal in Iran, that you are being restricted, or... How did you understand the situation that you were in, if it's all you've grown up with and all you've known?
As I said before, like when I was 13 and was forced to wear it, I didn't really understand the situation.
Yeah.
Because like at home, you hear your parents, your family talking about it all. Like, this is corrupt. This is that. This is this. So you're like interested. You're like, oh, what's going on? Why are they complaining all the time? And then when you get older and you look into it, you're like, oh, yeah, this is actually... not the way to live.
How does that fit in with the imagination that you had as a child as well, of wanting to go to further, better places? What made you think that those places were better, if you thought that life in Iran was normal?
That's a good question. I've never thought about that. I think I used to watch a lot of TV. I would see them, the way they would dress up.
Like American, Western TV?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, I wish I could do that. So like ever since I was a kid, I was like, oh, I want to dress up. But you can't really do it on the streets. You only dress up at home. I have a lot of pictures, actually, of me at home dressing up. But on the streets is the cover, the hijab. So I think that.
Did it make you want to go wild when you got to the States? Like, I'm going to dress however I want, to almost dress promiscuously, because you could not do that in Iran. But you were 15, so...
But I'm going to tell you, the first day I was in Austria, that's where we landed.
Okay.
When I went outside the airport, I still had my hijab on, because that was not normal to me to walk on the street without hijab.
Yeah.
I wore shorts for the first time in my life when I was 16 on the street. I felt like everyone was looking at me. I've never experienced that. It was weird at first. I couldn't just go wild. But then obviously now I'm like...
Now, do you have that in you where you're like, I'm going to go wild?
Yeah. Yeah.
As a rebellion against your life in Iran? More than someone like me who wouldn't really have that desire?
I don't think against my life in Iran, but I think it's rebellious against people who are too concerned about what other people wear. I think if that wasn't the case, I would not be wild.
Yeah, so sending them a message of basically pluck your eyes out.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was so oppressed during my time in Iran. And when I come here and people are like, oh, what is that you're wearing? I'm like, bruh, are you kidding me?
Does that happen?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who?
In your US, workplace? Girl. In US.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who told you that?
It was a family member, actually.
That makes sense if it's an Armenian family member.
It's serious. Yeah, it was an older lady, too. I was wearing a skirt and she was like, yeah. She complained to my dad right in front of my eyes, girl. So I was like, yeah, I'm still going to wear this. Like, why do you care? Is my question. And I never got the answer. I think, though, some people, they weren't able to experience such a thing when they were young. So when they see people doing the things they want to do, they're like, oh, they're like jealous, I guess.
Which is a little weird at the same time.
Yeah. So that's why I dress up a little too extra. I don't know if you've ever seen me out in the wild, but it's...
I see you like this.
No, this is my normal Gyumri outfit.
Yeah, I see you in your normal Gyumri outfit.
Yeah. But the other day, I wore something really controversial for Gyumri.
What happened?
Oh, the looks.
You can wear anything. You could wear something not controversial when you get lost.
I'll show you what I wore. So yeah, I've gotten a lot of looks for that. But then at the same time, I don't really care. It's about accepting the country with the positives and the negatives. So I don't care actually what people think. So I still wear it.
And if we were to close this talking about adventure so that we can get all three of these main topics in the interview, could you explain to me how you tie adventure to home? And what do you seek when you're pursuing adventure?
I think it's the itch in your soul. I'm just going to go back to my original answer. The rush and the itch for looking for something new. And that way you can find home.
Is that discontentment though? Because we also touched on contentment as not really needing to progress. So with the fact that we're always seeking for something new, would that show that we're not content?
I think, okay, let me put it that way. If you're searching for home and you're constantly looking for it, I call that an adventure. So then you will somehow find home, I'm guessing. Yeah, because if you're constantly looking for it and then you're in this adventure of looking for what is home or where is home, you're definitely going to find it. I don't know how I can necessarily tie adventure to home, because like home is within adventure. Yeah. If like adventure is a bubble, home is in it. So the whole experience is an adventure, I think.
So the journey is the adventure aspect.
Yeah.
And the pursuit of the journey is to find home.
To find home.
Okay. That's a super clear way of putting it.
Yeah. And I think home, it's not a one-time thing. You find it and that's home. Mm-hmm. You find it, 2 days later, it might not be home. So you can have different homes, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes you you.
Different homes at the same time?
Yes. Yeah.
So they're kind of like a hula hoop spinning around you.
Exactly.
Like a, I don't know what you call it, when you're a baby in a cot, the thing that goes around.
The stars?
Yeah. Do you have any metaphors?
I don't, hold on. I don't think I have any metaphors for that. No. In my head, when I said it, what I realized was like, I'm on a cloud and there are like many clouds around me. I'm jumping from one to the other. The clouds are the homes. Every time I feel like, oh, I want the other home, I jump to that.
And it would absorb you.
Yeah.
Give you a big hug.
Yeah. And like, to me, when I'm thinking, the clouds aren't like physical. They're like a feeling I'm missing. Then I can go to that feeling and experience it again and over again.
Can you consciously choose what cloud you're on? Or it's just something that happens and then you're being shifted from one cloud to another?
I think that's where the imagination thing. Like when I, let's say now I cannot have access to that feeling, I can imagine it and it makes me feel good.
When you imagine it, does the feeling come back to you?
Oh, yeah.
In its original form or? like an artificial.
It could be different. It's not like, I don't think it could ever top the original feeling, but like different rays on different spectrums.
And if you were to listen to this in 1 year from now,
mm-hmm.
give a message to Ellen
oh
in
God.
The future.
Hi, Ellen. I hope I'm still social. And I don't know what to say. I always get stuck because I don't know what to say to my future self. I hope I'm like in medical school because like, come on. I hope I'm medical school because that's the plan. And I hope I already made my trip back to Armenia.
You're planning on coming back within a year?
Yes, I am.
To Gyumri specifically?
I'm planning to go see places I didn't get to see, but then obviously coming here because this is one of the homes I would have. This is home, I would say, right now. See, my answer is different now. And at home, I'm still searching for a home. And I'm not tired of searching.
Beautiful.
Yeah. That's my message.
Do you have an Armenian saying that you want to end this with? Telling Elin this Armenian saying? Or a Farsi saying? Just to make yourself giggle or amuse
I can read
yourself.
A poem.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me see which poem I like.
I'm curious if in a year from now you're going to know what poem you're reading in advance because you've remembered it.
I think I am because I already have this in mind.
Is it a Farsi poem? Persian?
It is a Farsi poem, but I'm not going to say the whole thing, just a few.
Okay.
While I'm looking for that, I would like to ask you, what's home to you?
It's going to be another hour, minimum. No, I think I see home through the lens of redemption.
Oh.
I've thought about it a lot as well. Okay. I think that all of us go through life very much covered in scars, and I think that this is really disheartening because we are against the clock. Time is always passing. We are always nearing our death. And I think when we actually sit with that, it's completely terrifying, which is why I think we need the lens of redemption, our scars, our wounds being healed. And even the redemption of time, I think, is necessary for us to have any hope for living at all. So okay. I see home as redemption in this present moment, but ultimately looking forward to the future where all things will be perfectly redeemed.
Okay. Oh, wow.
It's very theological answer.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
I love that.
Mm.
But with the death thing, I think I'm so okay with that.
With dying?
I'm not fearing it at all. Because that's what's going to happen. There's nothing I can do about it, so why should I fear it?
For me, it's not so much fear. It's just uncomfortable because everyone knows how unique they are. I don't want to lose my uniqueness.
Yeah.
Just the discomfort of knowing that you're so unique and the loss that is, not just for myself, but for anyone to die, it's a huge loss in the world.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable to think that you won't be around and that other people you love won't be around.
Yeah, that's true. I always think at it as like finding peace. So that's why I don't really feel uncomfortable, I guess. But I never thought of it in that aspect. That's true. Okay.
Farsi poem.
Should I continue the section Persian?
Yeah.
Okay. Salam be shenavandagan aziz. Man Edin az Radio Maryam. In sher atar ro mikham baraye shoma bekhunam. Az ghazal shomare 571. Faqat ye chand beitesh ro migam. Miye ke dil zade astam raft o jan ham bi dil o jan chon konam. Ser eshqam ashkara gasht. Penhan chon konam. هر کسم گوید که درمانی کن آخر درد را چون به دردم دائما مشغول درمان چون کنم چون خروشت بشنوم هر بی خبر گوید خموش می تپد دل در برم می سوزدم جان چون کنم عالمی در دست من هم چموی در برش قطره خون از دل در زیر طوفان چون کنم Thank you.
What a beautiful poem. What a beautiful language.
Thank you so much.
What a beautiful voice. Thank you so much.
Of course. Such a pleasure.
Such a pleasure for me as well.